please?
Yes.
Can you try and find out for us where Honorable High is? We are grateful, therefore, even more for the members who are here. We are also grateful for Ms. Ntuli and her team from the BBBE Commission, who have, as is the normal excellence of the DTR, given us the documentation way ahead of the meeting, which we appreciate. So we've had some time to browse through it. There is also other documents that they will speak to that they have shared with us. That's the welcoming. In terms of the program, Honourable Members, we're going to have the presentation. Honourable Lund has also asked that we choose him at 12:05, which is fine. Right, so we're going to try and see if we can finish, listen to it, if we could finish by 12. So if you finish, say, by 10 to 12, that would serve us well, incorporating the question time as well. So we'll finish by 12. We'll attempt to do that. Then the other thing is, in terms of the program, we have here the second term program, which we have adopted. I just asked Subeka to share it with me, because there's two important events to share with you on that. The one is that next week we are having the local government week, and then the week after that we're doing the joint oversight in Limpopo. The staff has been doing work on that. We are not able to give you exact details as yet, but it is in line with the conversation that we have had in the meeting, that A, we need to look at the Kruger National Park, those tourist challenges that are there, or opportunities, and then B, that we don't want to travel for too far. So if Kruger is quite far from the destination that we go in, yeah, but you can't fly from Vembe to Kruger. Yes. From Vembe, you can't fly to Kruger. You have to drive.
Depends how far to drive.
But still, the distance is the same. Right, that we are looking at our, Honorable Faber, you and I are serious about this. We are looking at our safety when we are on the road. We don't want to spend hours and hours traveling by road. We can do it on an international study tour, yes, when we sit on the plane for hours. The last thing that I just wanted to raise with you under announcements, I will do after the presentation. We have an invitation from the Department of Tourism, but I will deal with it under the announcement. That said, Honourable Members, let us then start. We'll follow the normal procedure where there'll be the presentation. And part of the presentation, Ntuli, we're going to ask you to also introduce to us the delegates of your, or rather, your team, not the delegates, your team. We will then, after the presentation, give the members an opportunity to engage with the presentation. When we do that, we will take more than one question at a time. You will note down the questions and then respond to a cluster of questions. Thank you very much again for honoring the request to come and accommodate to us. Over to you.
Good morning to and honourable members, and thank you very much for the opportunity for the BBBE Commission to present to this committee. Our understanding is that we were required to present on our operation since inception, and our presentation will basically just take members through that, and we will then, you know, indicate as well to you the stages of our operation since establishment. But before we do that, let me allow the team from my side to quickly just introduce themselves, and then we can then move on to the presentation. We do have the team from the BBB Commission, but we also have the team from our line department, which is the Department of Trade and Industry. We do have somebody who's from the policy within the department, as well as somebody that is within our strategy and operations section. So I'm going to start with myself. My name is Zodwan Duli, the BBB Commissioner, and I'm going to ask the colleagues to introduce themselves.
Thanks, Commissioner. Morning, Chair. Morning, committee members, and delegates from the DTI. My name is Solomon Joseph Melodi, the acting senior manager within the B Commission. Thank you.
Morning, Chair Tesson, honourable members. Mrs. Wangwenya, compliance division within the Commission. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Liso Steto from the BE Policy Unit within the Department of Trade and Industry. Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson and honourable members. My name is Nontombi Matomela. I'm the acting GCOO from the DTI.
Good morning, members. My name is Roy Schneider. I'm the parliamentary liaison officer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The other people we do know, but the two people sitting on that side, the gentleman there and Madame, yeah, can we give you an opportunity to please introduce yourself to us?
Good morning, honourable members. Mary Gang from Independent Media.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Bongani Rukere. I'm from the Department of Trade and Industries Media Unit. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, as we have indicated, we are going to take you through our operations since inception. And as part of the documents that we have shared, and some which are probably going to be shared as we continue the presentation, we submitted the initial presentation last week. And today, the presentation that we're using in terms of content is not significantly different from the one that we shared. But what we thought we should do, because you've asked us to report from inception, but yes, we thought that it would be also important to then, in the presentation, provide also what our plan is going forward so that you can also see what is it that we measure ourselves against. So in the presentation, you'll see that the tables actually indicate our plan for this financial year and the coming 2 years. So, and then the last column of our presentation in the tables, you'll see that that is our report now of the activities for the past 2 years. That signifies our inception. And we also will be circulating to you a list of the cases that we have initiated, like the investigations that we've initiated as a commission. We also will be sharing with you the list of the non-investigations that we've already issued on matters which do not fall within our jurisdiction, or the matters that we did not think that there was merit to investigate. And then we also shared with you a list of the companies that are required to report in terms of the Section 13G of the legislation. And you'll see that in that list, we've provided you a list of all of the JSE-listed companies that have already submitted their reports, as well as government and public entities that have submitted. All right. So those are the documents that we'll be working from today. But as we take questions, then we'll be able to elaborate on other aspects that we may not have shared now. As we all remember, the BBB legislation was actually promulgated in 2003 for the first time. And over that period, it was implemented up until it was amended in 2013 when significant gaps were identified, which necessitated the changes. And one of the main things that actually transpired at the time is that there wasn't a monitoring mechanism to see how BBB is implemented. So therefore, everybody was doing as they wish and based on the advice that they get from their advisors and advices that they get from time to time from people that they believe understood BBBE. And in the wisdom of Parliament, they introduced changes to the legislation to say, we cannot have a situation where we've got policy that is so critical and important for the country. However, there isn't anybody to monitor how it's implemented. So the BBB Commission was then established through the amendments that Parliament effected to its BBB legislation in 2013. And however, it was not established immediately. The Commission was not established immediately. So I think 2014, then in 2015, the Department of Trade and Industry issued the revised Code of Good Practice. And then when the Code of Good Practice were then revised, then in 2015 August, then the minister assigned us to immediately start a process of establishing the BBB Commission as an institution. All right. So that's basically the background, just really to say where we're coming from. And the one thing that I think is going to be important in this presentation as well to remember is what the objectives of the BBB legislation are. The BBB legislation, the significance in the broad-based nature of it, will become evident as we do our presentation and as we share with you as well what we are also picking up in our investigations, but not only in our investigations, but also in the reports that are submitted to us as the Commission to see if in real terms the broad-based nature of this legislation is actually coming through and whether in fact it will be coming through in the near future. So one of the things that we have emphasized to all of the stakeholders that we've engaged on is for us to always remember what the objectives were. One of the critical things about the BBB legislation is that it relies heavily on government procurement as a leverage. So which means that government in itself must implement it so effectively in everything that it does. So if government is procuring goods and services, it must insist on empowered entities. So the requirements for empowerment must be compulsory and they must insist on that. That's one of the changes that Parliament effected in 2013, where initially government was basically had, they could apply the BBB legislation, but in 2013 the amendments were done that it is actually an obligation, it's obligatory for them to do that. So without government doing that, so if government is going to be issuing licenses for anything, it must consider BBBE. If it's going to be issuing any tender, it must consider BBBE. So it can't be an option. So that's one thing that we just want to emphasize. And as we do present to your operations, you'll see why that is significant. In doing that, my introduction is covering a few of the first slides. Without me necessarily going through them one by one, just in the interest of time. But I must just go back to our vision and mission as an entity, as well as our values. One of the things that signifies our mission is the need for us to accelerate the implementation. From 2003, when BBBE was implemented, we haven't seen significant progress. The last time when we came to this committee, we were using the figures that were being punted around in terms of the JSE listed companies, that there is no significant change in the ownership patterns. And I think the one thing that we must also indicate is that through the reports that we are receiving, we will also now be in a position to tell you if actually there's any progress. But for now, you can be assured that the progress is not that significant in terms of the patterns, the change of in patterns of ownership. So in terms of our mission, as I've indicated, Our mission is to really accelerate the productive implementation of the legislation, and we emphasize productive because our role is not just to be sitting there and waiting for people to make mistakes, but to actually assist even the entities to be able to do and apply BBBEE properly, both the private sector as well as the public sector. Our mandate is indicated in Section 13F of our legislation, and one of the significant part of our mandate really is the supervision and monitoring of the adherence of the Act. This gives us a broad mandate to actually look at the market and look at how the market is actually working and be able to assist the market to work better so that the objectives of this legislation are achieved. The second part, which is also one thing that was important that came with the amendments, was the power for the Commission to be able to receive complaints and to initiate investigations on its own where the violation of the Act are suspected. And also, what was one thing that was identified as a gap in 2013 when the amendments were done was the fact that there wasn't information about BBBEE, so there wasn't data that we can use to measure, you know, the progress and how we're doing in terms of BBBEE. And so the mandate that has been given to the Commission is to be able to register each and every major BEE transaction. So this relates to ownership transactions that happen in the country on a day-to-day basis. So the Minister issued the threshold for that and said that the threshold for the major BEE transaction will be a transaction which has got a value of 25 million. So all of the transactions that would meet that threshold then are required to be registered with the Commission. So we'll give you an indication of the report and on the registered transactions that we've already received. And then the second aspect, which is also going to assist us to be able to give you the data that will help you to measure how we're doing as a country, is the requirement for all of the entities that are listed on the JSE, all of the CETAs, as well as all public entities and organs of state, meaning that all government departments must submit reports annually to the Commission in terms of how they're doing against the five elements of BBBEE. So that is the requirement under Section 13G. So those are some of the functions in Section 13F. All of them are important to us, so we treat them all equally because that's the mandate that we must do. Even when we don't have adequate resources, but we ensure that the Commission is able to fulfill all of these functions. This slide talks to our priority elements arising from our mandate, and I think this also will become important in terms of how we've organized our work, and I'll just move quickly into how we then organized our work arising from our mandate. So as an organization, we've organized our programs in terms of our administration. We should look into the resourcing of the entity and how the entity functions and the efficiencies of the entity. Then we've got compliance, which is an area that focuses on driving the compliance strategy, and with the emphasis being ultimately getting voluntary compliance from the entities. And that's where a lot of our advisory work takes place, through opinions, as well as meetings, as well as oversight visits to entities in respect of transactions that they're engaging in. And we also give direct advice on transactions before they're implemented. So entities who implement a transaction is not coming to us to check if it's compliant. It's by choice. It's by their choice. But as the Commission, we have offered to them openly to say, before you implement it, bring it to us, we'll look at it and analyze it to you, and then be able to give you feedback on it just before you implement it to make sure that it's in order. And then we do have then the research, analysis, and reporting section. This is where the compliance report, the registered deals are being analyzed, and that's where in the future as well you will be getting the quarterly brief on how we're doing on BEE. So at the moment we do an annual one. The quarterly one was just only internal, but going forward from this financial year, we'll be giving you quarterly briefs that will give you a sense of how we're doing. And then we then have relationship building and stakeholder relations. We realize that as an organization, our mandate links up with a whole lot of institutions, particularly the National Prosecuting Authority, because the investigations that we conduct for us to be able to refer them for prosecution, they can only be prosecuted through the NPA. So that's one example of the relationship that we need to ensure that is built, it is facilitated properly, and that we it's always monitored that it functions. But there are a number of other organizations like the Competition Commission, the South African Receiver of Revenue. So our investigations touch on their mandate as well. So those relationships are important for us to build. So that's the focus there. But also generally the stakeholders that we're talking about here, like I said, it's the businesses that are operating in this country, but as well as the government, the public sector in terms of government, and all of the people that are required to comply with the legislation. And we've got expected outcomes for each of our stakeholders, but we obviously have not outlined them for this presentation, as this is just an overview part. And then the investigations and enforcement, that is where our investigation work will take place, as well as the enforcement element thereof. So once we've investigated, we can make remedial recommendations which would then be monitored. Or in some instance, when we have investigated, then we can refer for prosecution. That's the enforcement process also that needs to be monitored. And so just in terms of the processes that arise from our legislation and our regulations, as we've said, we receive complaints or we can initiate complaints on our own. So for each complaint that we receive, the regulation says that we've got up to 1 year to investigate. So the 1 year is our timeline. So if we are not done within 1 year period, then we do realize that we need additional time because some investigations are more complex, then we can ask, we can just inform the complainant that we need additional time, and then we can then get that additional time. But our period and our guide is always to work within 1 year, and with the view of actually trying as much as possible to finalize our investigation within the shortest period of time. And then the second area that we have outlined is around advisory opinions. As I've indicated, every business in this country is allowed to approach us on a confidential basis about a transaction that they plan to have. Then we can give them advice, and that advice is in writing, and it's through what we call an advisory opinion. So our turnaround time for the advisory opinions is 30 days. And as I've indicated, we try our best to provide the service that we provide in the shortest period of time. And the third element is the registration of major triple B transactions. As I've indicated, this is that requirement for every transaction that meets 25 million in terms of transaction value to be notified or registered with the Commission. And in that instance, when we receive that, we are required to register the transaction at least within a period of time. And so within 10 days, we're supposed to go back to the parties and indicate if the transaction meets the requirements for registration. And then once we've issued the registration certificate to say the transaction has been registered, then we then analyze the transaction to see if there's anything that we should be concerned about the transaction. That will involve looking at all of the finance agreements, the shareholders agreements, all of the subscriptions agreements and all of that to see if there are any issues that from a triple B perspective we should be concerned about. And within 90 days, we then must be in a position to give the parties feedback on the transaction. And in terms of compliance reports, I've indicated just illicit companies, CETAs, all organs of state, as well as public entities. So once they file their compliance report with us, we need to also assess it. And then once we've assessed it, we need to give them feedback within 90 days to say if there's anything that we are worried about their report. And then the last one that we have also added as a service to increase compliance is written clarifications. With written clarifications, what we do is offer a service where companies, if they are not sure about anything, whether you are in a board meeting and you are discussing something and you're not sure on anything, you can just drop us an email and then we can be able to give you a response. And we commit ourselves to 5 days turnaround time, but most of our clarifications, written clarifications, are done within a day. As soon as we receive it, we're able to give you feedback on what you want us to clarify for you. And you'll see as we present to you the statistics that there is a significant take-up of these services from the market, which is actually very useful for us. I've sort of given this background. The one thing that is important to notice is that the Commission started effectively to operate on the 6th June when the minister issued the regulations in 2016. So before then, we were establishing the institution. So it was the establishment phase. And in 2016, on the 6th of June, then the regulations that give us the power to do anything in terms of complaints, receiving reports and so forth, only became effective then. So we started operations really on the 6th of June 2016. And then the one thing that is also important to just notice from that slide is that in terms of BE transactions, even though we were established or we started operating on the 6th of June 2016, we didn't have the mandate to receive it because there was no threshold. So the minister issued the threshold on the 9th of June last year. So only from last year. So the transactions that we will be talking about today are transactions that were reported effective from the 9th of June to date. Chair, I'm going to just hand over to my colleague, Ms. Busingwenya, to take you through our operational implementation. As I've indicated, we have just put our report for that two-year period in the last column of this table. So the other part of the table is an indication of what our plan and strategy over the 3 years is. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Okay. I'll be focusing more on what we have done because that was the request. So when you look at the issues of advisory opinions, in the last 2 years, from 2016, we have issued 94 advisory opinions. We have issued 1,603 written clarifications. And what I need to also bring across is that out of those, we have had also tip-offs where people will say, you know, there's this conduct happening and you're not sure whether it will fall under jurisdiction or not. So what you have decided to do as well, in some instances where the information is not very clear but you think that there might be a contravention, then we started doing what you call site visits. So with site visits, we just make unannounced visits and then just to check whether what they are raising is true or not. And in the past, we started doing this around January this year. We've already done five site visits. And the four, we've actually found that there was a contravention. So those matters, we have referred them for initiation by the commission because there was issues arising out of them. And we've issued 48 letters in 2016-17 regarding invalid BE certificates. And during this past financial year, we issued 105. Most of them is where accountants would issue BE certificates. And as we know now, we only have SANAS, which does accreditation of verifiers. But you still find accountants issuing certificates and even to EMEs who are only supposed to have sworn affidavits. So we normally write to entities to actually require them to withdraw those certificates because they are invalid. And then when you look at the guides that you're supposed to do, even though they were wrote four, but you've actually issued seven purchase cards and notices, two or three of them were looking at the issues of advisory opinions, how to go about asking for an advisory opinion, and then also on the compliance report, what documents will require when people are giving us their compliance reports. Because what you find is that with Form 3D1, the information is really limited for you to assess and give a proper status on transformation. So that's what we have done. And then some of them were around the issues of modified flow through and your EME certificate. And then we have also done five publication of brochures looking at EMEs and QSEs and also complaints procedures and also reporting procedures to see how people can report to the commission based on the legislation. And also what we have done now, which we'll find on our site as well, is a frequently asked questions brochure because some of the interpretation questions are repeated. So we just felt it's important for people to then have a summary of that. And then with the triple B major transactions, since 9 June, when the notice came out, we've received 275 transactions, and then 89 were rejected for non-compliance because, as I mentioned, that there was an explanatory notice that went out to say what kind of documents they require. What you normally do first is that you write to the entity and ask for those documents, but then if they are not coming within a certain period, then we reject them because, as the commissioner mentioned, we're supposed to give them a certificate within 10 days. So if they don't give us the required documents, then we reject it and ask them to resubmit when the documents are ready. And then we have 11 pending. Pending means that's where we've asked for more information, so we're waiting for that information. And then we have issued 175 registration certificates, and then 79 of these transactions have now been assessed, and 95 of them are trust or they involve trust. And then you realize that when it comes to compliance reports, we have received 202 compliance reports. Out of those, 21 were from government departments or state entities. I must mention, Chair, that we have now written to all state entities and government departments to actually notify them that they're in non-complying, because they were supposed to already have submitted their documents. So what we have done now is an uptake where they are requesting for workshops so that they understand what are their reporting requirements. And I'm sure when you come back next year, the numbers will have risen significantly, as most of them are busy with that process. And then we have assessed 190 of those compliance reports. Now, moving along to program two, which is your investigation, we have received 384 complaints so far, with 83% of those purely focusing on funding. So as you can see, funding is still prevalent when you look at the numbers. Now, 35 were proactive, either through people giving us tip-offs or like we did site visits, or through monitoring of the media to see what's happening in the media, and then when you pick up things, and then we'll also do our own investigations. And then 101 have been investigations have been conducted, and then 63 notices of non-investigations were issued. Now, it could be that maybe there was a case, but the matter took place before October 24, 2014, so we would not have jurisdiction. But if the matter maybe was still continuing, then we could look at it. But if it happened before the amendment, unfortunately, the act doesn't look back. It looks forward. And some of them, you find that it's contractual issues or matters that don't fall within our mandate. Maybe it's a small business issue or it's a CIPC issue, then we'll refer those to the relevant authorities. And then 45 cases have been finalized and findings were issued. And then 13 summonses were issued. Now, in terms of fund attorney investigating, you ask for information and it's not forthcoming. When it's not forthcoming or the respondent is being difficult, the act has given power to then summon the information from those entities, which is what this is referring to. Is when you're dealing with the respondent who's obstructive, then you'll issue summonses. And then 4 cases were resolved through your alternative dispute resolution, because what you're looking at more than anything else is that there must be a redress for the complainant. So where you realize that you can finalize the case through an alternative dispute resolution, instead of referring it for prosecution, it might take 2 to 3 years, you look at the merits of the case and what should be more important for the complainant. If the alternative dispute resolution is a quicker way and better way for the complainant to get redress, then that's what we will follow. So we have finalized 4 cases in that regard. And then we are monitoring compliance. So when respondents get into the ADR, we also put conditions that they have to adhere to, and then we have to monitor that they adhere to those. And then 4 cases were referred to CIPC. This is where then you find that maybe the director was removed fraudulently. They think you're still a director, and then you realize that you're no longer a director, or because of corporate governance issues that are arising, either you don't have access to finances, or you don't get called to meetings, your dividends are not paid. Some of it touches on our legislation, but other things like your meetings and all that board resolutions touch on your company's act. So there's a lot of interaction between the two legislation, hence the referral to CIPC. And then 1 case has been referred to your NPA and SAPS. Moving along, we've got also program 3, which is around issues of research. We have done 4 sector reports that were produced, and we can forward those because we've got copies, and if members are interested, that should see what matters are arising from those sector reports. What you can mention that is that we are not really seeing much transformation happening in those sectors that we looked at. The main ones that we looked at was your agri-BEE, your transport and construction, and to compare when you're looking at them, transport seem to be doing relatively well compared to agri-BEE and your consumption. And then we also are required to produce 1 national status annual report. The focus here was to look at the compliance reports that were submitted by your JSE listed companies, and also to look at the triple B certificates that are uploaded on our portal, and to see what's coming out and whether there is transformation or not. And then with program four, the main issue is relationship building and stakeholder relations. And also as part of our functions, we require to have collaborations with certain entities like yourself and NPA. And we have had meetings with all of them except for staff, although we have written to them asking for a meeting. Now that there is a permanent commissioner, we'll write to them again, just remind them to grant us that meeting, because we do need that collaboration with them. And then we have concluded MOUs with your National Gambling Board, your CIPC, your Commission on Equity Employment, your Competition Commission, and your SANA. And with SARS and NPA, draft are in place. We're just waiting for them to be signed off. And also, we must mention that we also met with your SIU, and the draft MOU was also put in place, but then they got a new head, so we need to start the process with the new head, just to get it finalized. And then with Program 5, more here is aligned to your capacity building, especially for internal staff, and also looking at our systems, operational systems. So an ICT strategy and plan was developed and is being implemented. And then the website was developed and is operational. And then our financial systems as well were developed. And then the BBB certificate portal was launched in April 2017 last year. And then 3,158 certificates have been uploaded so far. And we also created a hotline where people can give us tip-offs as well anonymously when they want to do that. And we have had 10 officials trained on investigations and other skills. And then 20 graduates have been recruited into our internship program. Now, our annual events, every year we have one annual conference. So the first one we had, it was more like a launch for us that we had in 2016. We were looking at fronting purchases and also just to launch the commission, which was attended by 326 people. And then one thing that kept coming out was the issue of verifiers, to say that some people don't believe in the integrity of the verification process, and we decided to have an engagement with the sector just to find out what were the challenges. And this was attended by 176 verifiers. And then we had a breakfast on the National State of Transformation, where we presented the baseline study on the pace of transformation, looking at your JSE-listed companies, and the BBB certificates that were on our portal. 162 people attended. And then this year's conference really was looking at the role of the state to say how can the state really make sure that this procurement is used for real empowerment, because we believe that the state has that power to open up the markets and actually bring about transformation through, as the commissioner was mentioning, when you give incentives, when you give grants, when you sell our buildings, we can actually require transformation through those elements. So that session was attended by 757 people. And also what we're looking at was to just raise awareness to state government as well, to say they are also required to report on what they are doing as far as transformation is concerned. And next day we'll be able now to give a proper report to say what is government itself doing around issues of transformation. Now, when you look at our outreach and awareness sessions, the first year we didn't do too many because it was actually our own initiative, and we said we'd do 15, we ended up doing 23 for 16, 17. But this year we had an uptake where we did 17, 18, we did 80 outreaches. Most of it came from requests from government and also from private companies, where they actually requested us to come and present. And already this month, we have conducted, just this week alone, last week and this week, almost 10 presentations just from requests from people wanting to know more about the act. So I think there is now that awareness. We may need to do more, but at least there is that awareness. Now, the following slide is just what we have already presented, the transactions, so I won't repeat that one. I'll just move along to the issue of complaints handling. When you look at 2016-17, you'll see that we had received 222 complaints, and then 17-18, the number went slightly down, we received 112. And if you look at 16-17, around quarter two, there was a spike, probably because this was the first year where we could now start receiving complaints and also launch our own. We're 73, but then in quarter three of 2017-18, it went down to 19, but then we saw again an increase. And this quarter, we've received quite a few, so I think there's also a spike again, probably based on the sessions that we have had in the last quarter, where we're doing a lot of workshops. Now, the types of complaints that we have is, as I mentioned, fronting is the lead with 279 of the 384, followed by triple B certificates, which are standing at 30. And then contractual issues, at times people will report to us, but then those we find that they really are not raising triple B matters, but we have to record them. We receive 16. And then misleading adverts, most of these will come from your accountant, for instance, advertising on their website to say they issue E&E certificates when they should not be doing that. Or somebody saying, let's show you how to circumvent the legislation. So we've actually asked some of them to shut down those websites because we feel that they actually are perpetuating fronting practices. So that's what we'll refer to. Others will be matters that you cannot really, within our scope, say it falls under this, but then we have to record them. And then what we have done as well, Chair, is to give you complaints per sector. And you can see mining is in the lead with 51, followed by transport. And transport, most of them were arising from those owner-driver schemes issues. And then construction. So those are the main ones. And then followed then by other, which could be contractual or anything. But as you can see, mining is quite the lead. Even now, most of the complaints that you receive are around issues of, especially on ownership, where people are saying, we are part of an ESOP, we've never gotten dividends, we believe we still owe the company, we don't know what's happening, no meetings called, no financial statements, nothing. But, I mean, the company is benefiting because it's getting contracts and tenders because it supposedly has 25% or more black ownership. And then with issues of complaints, clarifications, we've already touched on those. Just to show the split that with advisory opinions, 16-17 we had 48, and then 17-18 we had 46. Clarifications, there was a spike. When it started, we only had 391, but then 17 and 18, it went down to 1,212. So you can see that that service is really being appreciated, and the numbers are growing on the issues of interpretation of the legislation. And also what we've done then with complaints, we've segmented them into the different elements to show which one is, as you can see, ownership is still up there for all quarters. And then followed it depending which year. In 1 year, it was other. And then in quarter three, management control also rose a little bit where there were complaints around issues of management control. But throughout the quarters, ownership is always the lead or the forefront. And then with advisory opinion, most of the questions around ownership, looking at your trust, sale of assets, at times we get advisory requests on sale of assets, and then also on ownership with an initial one to buy a stake in an entity, and then followed by skills development. And then with media monitoring, when you look at print, in quarter three, we got a lot of coverage. We had 53 hits. And then quarter four, the hits went a bit down, whereas in quarter one and two, it was still high. And then with broadcast, quarter one, we were standing at 33. And then it went down to 3 in quarter four. And then online, quarter one, we had 48 hits, and then quarter two, 59, quarter three, 49, and then quarter four, it went down to 18. Now, one of the other services that is really taking our time is meetings. Either where people want to clarify an advisory opinion that would have issued, or they want to come and discuss the transition that they want to put into place, or after we've given them our assessment on the transaction, they'll want to come and query or understand where we're coming from. So, and then some of them will be people who just can't walk in without an appointment. So As you can see, in 1617 we had 239, 1718 244 of those. And I will hand over to the commissioner. Thank you.
Having just taken you through our operations in that, what I'm going to just request before we just wrap up is for Joseph just to give you a sense of the investigations that we have dealt with, just in terms of the list. But I think I want him to start with the ADR agreements that have already been concluded, just to give you a sense of the issues that arise from that. And then we'll then just wrap up and then we'll then allow for questions. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Committee Members. Good morning again. As we all know that the B Commission is a creature of statute, having been established by Section 13B, when the Minister published the regulations on the 6th of June, it paved way for the Commission to be able to then enforce aspects of transformation and funding in particular. So Regulation 1511 provides that the BE Commission can then facilitate a resolution of a matter if it's of the view that the ADR mechanism is appropriate to address a specific complaint. So there are a number of complaints wherein a proposal or rather a recommendation is made for the resolution of a matter through the ADR mechanism, particularly wherein perhaps a complainant or rather a prejudiced party can be of the view that since we are still working together, the issue that is not really traveling down to the poor consumer, I mean to the poor complainant, could be the issue of economic interest or the benefit emanating from the proceeds of the entity. So indeed, we do have a number of cases wherein the Commission have facilitated the resolution through the Regulation 1511 mechanism. One of the first case involved an entity called Service, which you popular know, wherein a complaint was initiated by a certain Michael Mukwakwa and Michael Ndicheni, wherein the entity was initiated as an enterprise development program beneficiary from Service. So it has an entity which was called Rofu Papitua Limited, which was given an opportunity to develop itself through Service, and such entity was even given a contract by DECO. But such contract was orchestrated by Service because Service realized that it doesn't have the strong B points, and then it tapped into the B points of Rofuka. So the contract, the value thereof was 2.7 million. Then having intervened in the matter, then we realized that this contract ought to have been given to Rofu Papitua Limited, but it was given to Service due to the triple B points that were actually a part of as that of Rofu. So our intervention, then we felt that in the most critical part that we consider within the mechanism of 1511, we realized that the key issue is the redress to the prejudiced party. And then the prejudiced party in this case, we're talking Rofupa, the Michael Ndicheni, and Michael Mukwakwa. And we also felt that one of the cardinal pillars of the ADR would be the contribution towards promoting the objectives of the Triple B. So we start with the redress to the prejudiced party, which was the value of the contract, the whole value. Then we said the whole value has to be we have to find quantified. It has to be quantified, and the whole bill then be paid towards the rightful recipients, which is Michael Ndicheni and Mr. Mukwakwa. And then we also request a voluntary contribution towards the promotion of Triple B objectives in the tune of 1 million, which was then paid or channeled towards the National Student Aid Fund, the NESTO, so that it can then contribute towards the skills development in the country. So that was one of the first cases that we actually dealt with. Then the other case that we also dealt with is the one in relation to Mamoud Southern Africa, wherein a complaint was lodged by certain Mr. Kamat Hendricks, who alleged that they have formed a joint venture which was called Mamoud Greenham. Mamoud Greenham then was actually used as an opportunistic intermediary to source or obtain contracts from various entities such as Josafi groups and so forth. So we also intervened in the matter, and then we realized that the matter actually started around about 2014 and at the ended before the coming into effect of the Triple B Act, but it was just a few contracts which were left, which some of them came to an end after the coming into effect of the Act. And then having realized that the key issue was firstly the unceremonious removal of Mr. Hendricks as a director and also a shareholder, therefore frustrating him there, but later on he then resumed his directorship. Then he continued the complaint until eventually with our intervention, then the parties, the matter was actually settled in the amount of 25,250,000, wherein the poor black shareholders and directors then get to share the amount, because he was not alone when he, as a shareholder of the entity in question. So, and when we drafted the ADR, then we also had to make sure that it also resonates with those cardinal pillars that I mentioned earlier, wherein I said it's a redress to the prejudiced party, the other one is a voluntary contribution towards promoting the objectives of Triple B in, and then the third one, which is also key, is for these entities to then put measures in place in the entity to ensure that this purported contravention do not resurface or recur in future. So the entity then contributed 5 million, which was then channeled or paid into the National Revenue Fund, the Central Revenue Fund of the National Treasury. The other pertinent complaint that we also deemed it appropriate for it to be resolved through the alternative dispute resolution mechanism was the one involving a certain Mr. Matsiriso and Tracy Sogo against an entity called Colon Trade 26. Wherein primarily he was he's a man in his late 50s. He was complaining that he never really got the economic benefits of the entity. He was a director, but he was not even remunerated commensurate with his position as a director. And he was also a shareholder in the entity, a 26% shareholder to be precise. And then they have actually, having started with the investigation, then they have actually approached the BE Commission and said, no, we have realized that in one of your letters that you wrote to us, you have alluded to the fact that Regulation 1511 do make provision for alternative dispute resolution. What do you mean? Then we had to take them through the cardinal key pillars that I've actually mentioned, to making sure that they put measures in place as well. So for that one, we had to ensure that we had to quantify that which was actually deprived. All the economic benefits which were deprived to Mr. Tshobo dating from 2014, which the other directors have actually claimed, then we had to quantify such and make sure that at least there is a redress to the shareholder, Mr. Seso. And then he was paid 487,764. And then all the loan, the loan that was there also, it was actually the amount also was credited into his loan, and then there was 121,941 that was calculated on the base of 20% of net profit share that he was actually deprived of. So he also got something. So, and the other pillar, which was crucial on this as part of redress here, was that the 528,108, which was the 1% of the annual turnover of the coal and trade, was then determined by the BE Commission, and the amount was then also paid into National Student Financial Aid as a contribution towards promoting skills development in the country. The other complaint, for the interest of Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members, it was the one where the BE Commission has actually initiated the investigation after receiving a tip-off that there is a certain Mr. Muima and Mr. Mollo who were merely treated as tokens in the entity, and they were just mere employees and then were not treated as members. So when you are a member in an entity, you need to attend meetings, you need to participate in the day-to-day operations of the entity, you need to be consulted when key decisions are made. In fact, you have to jointly make those decisions. So in this case, decisions were made without involving. So we had to intervene as a BE Commission and felt that now we have to then quantify that also, which they were deprived from the 24th of October, because we can't go to the period before our inception as the BE Commission, otherwise we'll be seen to be acting ultra-vires. So we now determine the amount of compensation which was actually due to a certain Mr. Elias Muima in the tune of 450,000, which then we then discussed with the company, and then we came up with terms, which were then codified in the alternative dispute resolution agreement, wherein they had to then pay him the amount in question. As we speak, I think a month ago you went to the offices as part of our oversight responsibility to conduct the site visit to ensure that indeed there is no victimization as a result of this arrangement, and that the members indeed are actually actively participating in the operations of the entity as members with significant membership interest in the entity. Then we found that the chap indeed had an office and then was also responsible for operations. So for that, we even took pictures. And it was as part of monitoring the alternative dispute resolution agreements that we enter into. And same applies to all these matters. Before we can then determine that the matter is now closed, we have to satisfy ourselves, pay a site visit, and see whether indeed all those things that are actually indicated in the alternative dispute resolution agreement are there. All right. Recently, we also had one of the complaints that was received in 2016, wherein the complainants were lewd or rather appointed as drivers or owner drivers of the entity. They initially started as employees, and then the entity started a company called Ukunceda, literally meaning to assist. So as and when they were due into this particular arrangement, they were told that we are going to assist you, but you find that the assistance is not as much as it was actually promised. Because as and when the entity said we are declaring dividends, then the likes of Mr. Isaac Lombard Mr. Nkongo, there are about four members who were actually shareholders in the entity. Then they were only paid 1,000 rand on a yearly basis. And then we felt that this is an abuse of BBBEE. Then we had to intervene as well. But we realized that it's also a matter that started for a very long time. And as we speak, these people are now pensioners, as we speak. They are no longer in the entity. But we have also intervened, and 1 million as a redress was actually apportioned to the complainant commensurate with their shareholding in the entity. So, and what we also managed to really get again as a voluntary contribution against what's further in the interest of BEE, particularly the skills development. Through the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, there was the 903,552.53. So that money also will go into NAFSA. One of the recent one that was signed, I think last week, if I may to be precise, yeah, last week. It was the one in relation to a certain Dombima Zibuko. Nomfezibu Zuma from SAPC, when they were assessing contracts, they have realized that there is a lady who was used as a, she was merely a receptionist. And then her role would be to submit the documents for tender. Then they then said, no, we are smelling a rat here. Then they engaged the BE Commission and said, no, Kulu, please look into the matter. We looked into the matter, and then we realized that she was no longer being treated as a receptionist, but she graduated and became one of the, I think she was junior managers within the entity. So the entity wasn't actually doing what one can call outright fronting, is that the poor Ms. Mazibuko was not actually paid commensurate with the role. And then after our intervention, then we determined what could be the right quantum, or rather the right figure that needs to be paid for her. And then you do that by comparing with her counterparts. Then you determine what is actually fair. And I think a lump sum of 120,000 was also realized that should be paid. And for the economic interest, then we realized that the company needs to commit that they will now pay the 13.26% black female ownership shareholding, which resonates with a shareholding, as in when dividends actually play. And for contribution now towards the skills development, Honorable Chair, we felt that 1% of the annual turnover of the entity was used as a basis, and then 199,000 was then paid into them. So these are a typical case that we received, wherein we realized that we can still, I mean, if the parties are still together, they can still work together, but we need to make sure that we convince them and they do the right thing by putting all those measures in. So on that note, I thank you. It was a gist. There are many matters where we felt that as a regulator, we need to intervene and get the companies to do the right thing and not undermine transformation. Thank you.
Okay. So just in concluding, I just want to indicate that when we came here to the committee previously, we did indicate that we adopted a compliance-driven strategy as well as a corrective enforcement strategy. So if we measure the two, if we get our compliance strategy to work effectively, then we should ultimately see a decrease in the number of complaints. All right. So over time, as we look at it, so the more people then do the right thing, the less complaints we expect to get. So every year when we come here, we'll try to also show you how we're doing up against that. So far, as we've indicated, Ms. Ngwenya has indicated to you how our compliance strategy is working through the take-up of the of our advisory services, and we're seeing companies coming to us now proactively. There's still a number of companies that are still afraid to approach the commission. Sometimes you find that people actually go to the DTI first and then raise something to come around the other way. But I think what we are saying to the companies is that we actually are open for them to approach us, you know, upfront so that we can assist them. Our job is not to wait for them to make a mistake. And that's what our compliance strategy is saying. So when we see the increase in the take-up of our advisory services, the approach for meetings, we actually get excited because we're thinking that in the long run, then the objectives of the Act are going to be met. All right. And then if you look at now, in terms of just the what Joseph is looking about, Chair, I think when we do our presentation, often we want to remind members of the five elements of BBBEE. That's ownership, management control, skills development, enterprise and supply development, as well as socio-economic development. So that those are the areas that companies are measured on at all times when they get verified and so forth. So when we give you statistics to show you we're receiving a lot of complaints regarding ownership, it means we're receiving complaints maybe from shareholders that are saying, we're told that we are shareholders in this company, especially employees that are made shareholders. Then they are told that they would come and say, we're told in, maybe in 2006 that we are shareholders, but we've never received a cent, we've never been invited to a meeting, we've never been even given dividends. We don't know what this company is doing, but we are supposedly owners. And the worst thing is, in one case that was reported to us, is that the employees got to know that they are shareholders when they got served with legal documents. So the company that was, the entity that was suing the company that they are shareholders in, served all the shareholders with the legal documents. So only then the person realizes, oh, I'm a shareholder in this company, I didn't even know. So those are the kinds of things that we are uncovering every day through these complaints. So as I indicated, that as we go along as the commission, we'll also be able to tell you whether the broad-based nature of BBBEE is actually working very well. And if not, what are the things that we should put in place to help? People that are more vulnerable are employees. Employees are made shareholders, and they're complicated structures that are done, complicated agreements that are never explained to them, and they don't understand it. And every year, the company claims that it's got black ownership through its employees. So every year, they will claim that, but there would not be any economic benefit that go to the employees. And those are the types of cases that we... So in some of the ones that Joseph has touched on now, for instance, with the transport, the Kelly Transport. Kelly, as a transport logistic company, decided to create Ubunyada to say to employees, we now want you to benefit from BEE, we want to empower you. And then they create this Ubunyada entity for them. And they say, you're going to be our black empowerment entity, and we're going to be helping you. But then they've never received anything. So all they then just get to be given every year is 1,000 in their pocket every year. But they don't know how much the company is doing. They don't even know how much they're actually entitled to. So the role of the commission, when we step in, we look into those things. So we look into the financials of the company. We'll determine what is it that was paid to all of the shareholders based on the turnover that was made and all of that, and then determine what we think is a reasonable compensation that ought to have been given to these people. So like Joseph said, like the four employees are even now pensioners, and they've been fighting this thing for a number of years. They've not been getting anywhere. But ultimately now, they've got some money back that they ought to have been paid over the previous period. So that's where we see our value as the organization to say, we must be able to safeguard what BEE was intended for, to say whoever ought to have benefited must actually ultimately benefit. And we're not going to tell you some of the other cases. We've given you a list. For instance, on the list of our initiated investigations, you'll see the investigations that initiated against the various entities, MTN, Nokia, and all of those. If you want us to explain a specific matter, we'll then explain it to you. But for now, we will not be able to select any to say this, but you've got the information. And then, so the other thing that we also just wanted to indicate We spoke about the EMEs, QFEs. Sometimes we speak about abbreviations, but we're hoping members would understand that we get used to these abbreviations. But the qualifying small enterprises are enterprises between 10 million and 50 million in terms of turnover. So that's the classification. And then the EME are exempted micro enterprises. So that, those are all enterprises that have got a turnover of less than 10 million. All right. And everything else above 50 million in turnover would then be your generic entities. All right. So the significance of this categorization is that the requirements of the Act in terms of verification applies differently to them. So if you're less than 10 million in turnover, you're exempted from bearing the cost of being verified. So if you, for instance, a small enterprise less than 10 million, you will then get entitled to automatic level. So if you're 100% black owned, then you will have automatic level 1. If you are 51% black owned, then you will have automatic level 2. So it just gives you automatic level without you having to go through a verification process. So that's one of the things that was done to reduce the cost of doing business for smaller entities. But then when you are a QSE, then there are certain levels of the need for verification. So if you're 100% black, for instance, you don't have to get verified. You can then just get an automatic level that says you're 100% black. So you don't have to have your blackness to be verified. So that's the significance of it. And then, did it come out wrong? Okay. All right. And then in terms of the as Joseph has indicated, our alternative dispute resolution mechanism, we apply it only when we feel that the complainant will be better served through that process. So if we don't go through that process, what it means for the complainant is that we will say, maybe investigate, we find that there's fronting, then we refer it to the NPA to prosecute. The criminal process can take up to 10 years or they can take up to 5 years. We don't know when the prosecution will ultimately happen in the criminal court, all right? So what does it mean for the complainant who is still battling and doesn't have their money in the pocket, that they will still be sitting there with the cost, legal, because most of them, by the time they come to the commission, they go through so many processes. They approach even, they go with some of the politicians here in Parliament would have been approached by individuals having problems, raising. So by the time they come to us, they've battled so much. So we also take that into account. So where a person has been battling, so like Mr. Hamad Nord Hendricks, who has been battling with Mahmoud on that dispute, it's a long-time dispute. And this man was a shareholder and was entitled to this certain amount. So the question is, how do you then resolve his matter in the interest of him, but also in the interest of empowerment? So we'll then determine it based on that. So in that case, for instance, Joseph has indicated with Mr. Hendricks, as shareholders, they actually got that 25 million for their shares, when actually they were kicked out with nothing. So ultimately they got that value, and they're able to show for it that this is what we had for our asset, which was the shareholding in this company. So we do that on that basis. And it might be at some point that somebody says, but why don't we just refer them for a criminal prosecution? We'll determine what will be the best outcome for transformation, but as well as the complainant as well. And then in terms of the transactions, Busi did give you a sense of how many transactions is dealt with and so forth. There are some transactions in this country, very big BE deals that have been announced in the papers, but we don't see them reported. Some of them we remind the members, the parties, we send them letters and say, we've seen your transaction, we think that the value is above 25 million, you have not reported. So some will then immediately report. But what is the concern for us is those ones that report and they don't give us information. Sometimes the value of the transaction will be said to be 250 million. When the documents are submitted, you don't see the purchase price, you don't see the purchase agreement you don't even see the sale of shares agreement. So then you ask yourself, on what basis did you even determine that the stake is 250 million? So there's a whole lot of issues about these transactions that are coming up, but in the report now that we'll produce, as we've indicated, the minister only issued the threshold last year, so we'll only be able to assess the full set of it in terms of the values. We don't know how these values are determined, but we find that increasingly employees are said to be buying stake for significant amounts of money. It's a lot and lot of millions, and we don't know if the employees even understand what that means for them. And you don't see also when the value is going to vest and how the repayments are happening. So those are the things that are coming out in these transactions, but then we're going to assist the commission as well to be able to monitor these transactions for the country. And just to say that some of the entities, when we ask questions, they disappear. So we're now following back on them to say, bring that transaction. We ask you a question, bring it back. Because a whole lot of these transactions are not really that transparent. So there's no documentation. So you ask yourself, how do you buy something? Even for 10 rands, you actually want the receipt. But people are buying shares for lots and lots of millions, but there's no agreement towards that. So it shows some of the government issues that come out of that. So we have not published most of our findings. It's not because we have not made these findings. It's because there are certain stages that we require to make sure that we tick for us to publish. But you'll see, as an example, we've published one against SABNT. All right. This was an entity that was serving as a verifier, and basically in that a complaint, it was that the verifier had used the same set of financials to verify the company. So basically for this year and next year, they just use the same information to verify you. And basically what it does, it gives you the same outcome. If you were level 1 last year, you're still level 1, even though they have not actually looked at the information that they should be using. So that is actually another form of misrepresentation of a BBB status. So ultimately, when a company wants to be verified using the previous information, it's when it realizes that for that other year, they probably did not do very well. So they want to use the old information. So if the verifier agrees, so the verifier colludes with the company to actually hide the real BBB status of the entity. So that is the significance of this finding. So I think in everything that we'll be able to publish, we'll then be able to show the significance of why we are intervening and what is it that we are trying to stop. So we're going to then stop at that and allow for any questions, and we are available to respond to everything that we have provided to you, and we can then elaborate on some of the issues. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Ntuli, and your team. Allow me to just make some 3 comments before we throw it open for questions. The one is, in the report, there is reference to the conference on fronting that was held. The Honorable Joan Phelps, as chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, and myself were invited, because that was, as has been said, almost like the launch of the BBBE Commission. And we were quite overwhelmed when we look at the challenges that this economic transformation holds for our country. And we therefore welcome the report even more. That's one thing. The second comment that I want to make, honorable members, remember with our oversight last year, we visited the women, or rather the woman that had the filling station in Middelburg, in Mpumalanga, where she was having difficulties. We reported to the Department of Energy on that matter. And just in the last week, the new Minister of Energy has looked at the transformation within the diesel distribution sector. And the BBBE Commission is obviously challenged now to see how do you cooperate with those other, they called it SOEs, but also with the other departments of government that are confronted with the resistance to transformation. The last one that I would just want to mention, because it's as new as last night, when our President, His Excellency Cyril Ramaphosa, announced the team on Invest SA, and the four people that has been appointed to lead that. Now, the newspaper reports of last night indicated that in the last couple of years, investment has declined from 79%, sorry, from 79 billion to only 17. Right. Now we have this new impetus into investment. What I wanted to put before us related thereto is that it is this commission that would also have to monitor that when this new investment happens, it actually contributes towards broad-based black economic empowerment. So they may come here, sorry, Ma'am Tuli and your team, and say that you are making progress, but the problem in economics is that you are going to be confronted with many more within the next couple of months as the new investment occurs, both internal foreign direct investment and national investments. But what we should have ideally seen is how those that are controlling the capital is actually contributing towards this transformation process. We're not hearing that. What we're hearing instead is that there is resistance, there are difficulties with ensuring compliance and the correction of that. So this commission, therefore, has very important work in our eyes to you, Commission, and your team, and we welcome the opportunity to engage with you. Honourable members, let's agree that what we'll do is we'll take questions. I'm looking at our time. We have just about 20 minutes. So what we're going to do, we're going to give every member 5 minutes. We give you 5 minutes. You can raise questions, comments, whatever you have. If you take 3 minutes, it's fine, but we give you a maximum of 5. Because I'm sure, because it's the first time that this commission has been reporting to us, there's a lot that we want to engage. What we want to ask you, commission, and your team, is not to then try and respond to all the questions. Respond to those that you can, and then you will give us written responses to the others. Because we'll see how we go in terms of the time. But as we have agreed before, welcome Honorable Khai and Honorable Mativula. We have agreed before that we will disperse at 12. So let's have the Honorable Faba.
Before that, the question, can I have a clarification on this before we ask questions? So there's this thing about non-investigation. If you can clarify this list. Just explaining it without taking that through each one of the
lists. They explained it when the meeting started.
Oh, sorry.
But we will help you on that, Honorable Khan. We'll sit and help you on that. The Honorable Faber is from the Diamond Province, from Northern Cape. We'll have him first. Then we'll have the Honorable Mahwebo, who is from the Eastern Cape. And then we have the Honorable Khai next to him, is also from the Eastern Cape. And then we'll have the Honorable Mativula, who is from Limpopo. Let's have them, and then... Okay, let's have the Honorable Lond as well. Then we conclude, because I have some questions, because I wanted to go with him. So we'll have him, and then I'll be the last one. Honorable Faber, please.
Thank you, Chair. It should be less than 5 minutes. The BBBEE Commission is empowered in terms of the BBBEE Act 46 of 2013 to investigate complaints. Now, I would like to know about, number one, as you all already know, on the fraudulent BBBEE certificates, specifically by the Gupta Link businesses, to supply contracts with Eskom, for instance. We know that combined with Eskom's willingness to blindly accept these might consult in criminal behavior and must be investigated. Obviously, I would like to know from your side on these most probable fraudulent BE certificates, if you're already investigating it. I haven't heard anything from you at this stage. We've obtained certificates, obviously, with the applications that was made to ISCOM. And we saw that the Geta did not fit the profile or instance of micro enterprises because it was more than an annual turnover of 5 million. Then we can go on with the Geta, the Geta Optimum Coal Mine, as well as Australian Consultancy, also where we found that there was zero black ownership on some of these. I'd like to know certificates issued to companies like these. Are they being investigated? Why don't we ever hear the outcomes of these? And what the situation is as far as yourself are concerned on these? Thank you.
Honourable Father, Honourable Mahwebu.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Commissioner. I just want to know, in fact, I want to go back to your remarks earlier on, Commissioner. You said there is a need to accelerate the implementation of the Triple BEE. And I'm sure all of us under this roof, we all agree. But here is the problem. The problem has always been, you know, what undermines the efforts of transformation in our nation is corruption. And I always argue that, you know, to deal with corruption, we need to ensure that, you know, our institutions, you know, are meant by men and women of integrity, men of, and women whose character is beyond reproach. Now, you know, in your institution as the commission, when you recruit staff, for instance, is the staff vetted? Is this stuff, you know, do you do continuous or periodical lifestyle audit? But I'll tell you why. Because if you want to accelerate implementation, you know, of the Triple BEE, then your staff and the officials become vulnerable to fraud and corruption because, you know, the big players in the BEE will bribe them to get the certificates. And we sit with the same problem where the transformation endeavors are undermined. So it is in that spirit that I'm asking this question. Then the second question now is on program number two, investigations and enforcement. Now, I want to go back to your remarks as well and to your presentation, Commissioner, and I am worried, or in fact, I would invite you and challenge you to reconsider how you're doing things and with due respect. You're saying we investigate where we find, you know, there is evidence of criminality, that is, we refer those matters to the NPA to investigate. And in other matters, we also utilize our mandate in terms of ADR, where we have reasons to believe that it would be in the interest of the complainant to do so. Let's pause on that and look at that. Because if you're going to investigate, your approach worries me, because if you're going to investigate and refer, then you will have problems, believe me. You need to have an approach, or you need to consider having an approach that is called, in any investigation, you know, space, is called multidisciplinary approach, where you find a way, each time you receive complaints, when you screen them, you sit with an official from the NBA, a duly, you know, a qualified advocate or prosecutor working there. If from the screen of that complaint, and from when you start the investigation from day one, it sits with you side by side, making sure that when this matter is ready for court, you have been working in tandem and you're working together. Because if you're going to investigate, it's going to take you time. 6 months down the line, when you refer, evidence has disappeared. Or, you know, all that was needed is nowhere to be found anymore. So multidisciplinary approach is the way to go. In fact, it's best practice in any law enforcement investigation and in any institution that has got, you know, a mandate to investigate. So I want you to comment on that and tell me why would it be difficult for you to do that. Secondly, on the issue of the ADR, where you deem that, or you have reasons to believe that it would be in the interest of the complainant to really go for the alternative dispute resolution, you will take that approach. Now, my worry is that, in fact, I want to go back to that example that I think it was you, Mr. Melodi, that you made in your ADR cases you were presenting to us, when a member or a director of a company, you discovered that he or she was not sitting in meetings, he was not a director in any way, he was not attending meetings, he was not involved in decision making. So it means obviously the company was flaunting, isn't it? Or misrepresenting that these persons are our directors or the members of the company. Then if that was the case, one then will argue that the act criminalizes that conduct as flaunting. Now I'm just applying my own simple legal mind. Now, you have went the ADR route, and you have not indicated to us that we have also, you know, approached this matter in a double-pronged manner, where you are saying, notwithstanding the ADR, where we have managed to, you know, to discover the monetary loss and reinvest these members or this member up to 400,000 plus that you have given us. Fine, happy with that. But simultaneously, hence I'm saying the double-pronged approach, that the NPA should have been sitting side by side with them, analyzed to say, we have evidence here for funding, because these guys or this company has been funding for all these years. So you need to work with them, there must be a synergy, there must be a platform where you sit together as you screen these matters, like many other institutions are doing today. And that's the only effective way you guys can maximize your mandate. So, but you are utilizing it, but I'm telling you to maximize it and to find the best way of doing it. And lastly, Chair, I still have 57 seconds left. Lastly, on the issue of non-compliance by the departments. Now, you have indicated that the departments, the government departments, are the culprits here. Am I right, Commissioner? Now, you have said you are preparing a workshop with them, and I'm sure we welcome that, you know, but here is my problem. Again, in your stakeholder relationships with other, you know, government institutions, one would want to see you working, perhaps, that's my view, and I want your comment on that. One would want to see you working closely with the Office of the Public Protector. I'll tell you why. Because all government institutions and government entities, the Public Protector has got the mandate to investigate all those institutions, you know, to investigate those institutions and any conduct in state affairs. Now, if government departments are failing you, because you cannot investigate government departments, you can only empower them. But sometimes they deliberately do so due to incompetence or negligence. So you need to have the Public Protector to hold them accountable, those institutions. This is the way to go. So you need to find the Public Protector to be a stakeholder permanently attached to you. You need to find the NPA when you initiate your program too, that is investigation enforcement. To me, that would be the best way to maximize your mandate. But well and fine, I'm here to see what you're doing, but I think there's space to improve, and these are my few heads up and suggestions. Thank you, Chair.
I think we should let you know that he was a prosecutor. And you can hear the emphasis that he's placing on the questions to you. Thank you, Honorable Mahwebo. Honorable Khai.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you very much, Commissioner, and your team. I just wish that this commission was established when the first act on BEE was enacted. I mean, it would have been far now in terms of addressing the issues of transformation. But I'm so worried, I don't know whether this could be done in the form of a regulation. The fact that you don't deal with the cases that took place before the 6th of June. I'm just thinking whether a regulation, because it would be easier if you deal it in terms of the regulation rather than an amendment to the Act, because it may take a long time to do that. Perhaps if the Commissioner could consider that. I wanted to have the explanation on this, but I'm told that it was explained, because there's a list of entities also with the allegations. I thought perhaps we would have another column to what is happening then with those cases. because I'm interested, because that's the list of entities and also the allegations and the dates, without necessarily saying it, and what, because there's a lot of funding, as you were explaining in the report, that about 83%. One would be interested as to what is happening with regard to those cases, because we haven't seen, I don't know if there's anybody who has been jailed for that criminal act. The I would also have liked a situation where in the report we have clarity in terms of the provinces, what is happening in the provinces with regard to these cases. Because as NCOP, we deal with provinces. It would have been nice if you know what is the situation with regard to our provinces where we're coming from. I don't know if perhaps also perhaps as a, in a form of a regulation that there should be exclusion of employees as part of this whole process of implementation of BE, whether we should not, because it's being manipulated, it's going to be difficult for you to know each and every workplace what it's doing with regard to its own employees. I'm not saying that companies or workplaces cannot, out of their kindness, have sales for employees, but it should not be regarded as part of, the whole BEE process. It should be excluded. So I wanted to suggest that process. I was looking at your SWOT analysis, see that you're complaining about the office space, that as well as the complaints with regard to human resources. The other issue, which we also raised in another committee, because we are the same people that also served in another committee, where Competition Commission was reporting to us the progress that they are making, particularly with regard to the penalties. But whilst they are managing to make sure that there are penalties paid, but that does not result in them being effective then in doing their work, because all those penalties are going to the National Revenue Fund. We're checking whether the possibility of perhaps the percentage of those penalties going back to the Competition Commission. I'm asking them the similar question, whether we should not, I've always been raised this informally with the Minister of Economic Development, Honorable Patel, and he said that they were talking to the then Minister, Malu Kigaba, about that issue. I wonder if you should not consider that as well, that some of the percentage on the penalties also go to the commission itself to assist with its own resources. Yeah, thank you very much. So much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Very
much.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you very much, Chair. When the commission was representing, I was noting something when you say you only visit sites when you got a tip-off. I just wanted to check whether do you have a specific program in your department where you necessarily move by province to check on this issue of site visits. And number two, I'm also concerned about the issue of language barriers affecting stakeholders. I'm raising this concern because in most of cases, especially in rural areas where our men and women are not educated, where they must know the legislation. So is there any specific program that you have made to address this issue of language barrier? Thank you very much.
Honorable Lawrence is from the Western Cape. We'll give you some of the Honorable Matabula's time.
I think that time already went to the Honorable Magwebu. Most of it's been covered, but what I'm really concerned about, you say that your threats are your lack of political buy-in and the support, and then also you say that there's a inconsistent application by government department and entities. Now, we get all the other departments, all the other entities, if not in front of us, in front of our colleagues, at the other select committees. Now, shouldn't that be one of the first places where you come and say, listen, let's engage on that so that the low-hanging fruit, you address that first, because that's supposed to be the easiest place to address, and then start naming and shaming those that are not responsible for that. Not saying stop doing your job in the other bit, but that's such an easy one that we can start following up again. And that should actually then be brought in on that, what is that monitoring tool that falls under the presidency? That should actually be part of the performance assessment of our ministers, of our HODs, that they're not even buying into that. So if you can maybe just elaborate, what have you done to try and get that oversight on this level, and maybe an indication of what you can provide to us so that we can assist in that, if not through this select committee, at least through our colleagues in the other select committees.
Thank you very much. Honorable Long, just helping me with the question that I have. More comment. You say we had a Lakota of the Gauteng province. And what came out of there, the Honorable Long, is that we challenged the MEC, who is managing the budget in the province, to deal the same way that we challenge people in this committee, to say, what are you doing with regard to payment of small businesses? But we also then said that it's important in terms of BBBE that you must give us an indication what percentage of the products and services that you are procuring you will procure from BBBE compliant companies. And we set very clear targets in our plan for the provincial government, because the Honorable Lord is correct when you look at the department. But it's also important that we look at the provincial governments and at the local governments as well. But you see, we, as members of the NCOP, have a unique relationship with local government, but don't have that same influence, because we are here representing the provincial governments. And we can raise those things with the provincial government to say, but what are you doing in that regard? That is more my comment. My question would first be on, you maybe requesting you, Commissioner, and your team to follow up on this question of Honorable Lawn, to say, can you give to us, as part of your APP, what are your plans in terms of intergovernment relations? Now, I'm not as radical as what the Honorable Lawnd and Faber might be to say, give us everything. I'm just saying, on those that you have mentioned here before us today, if we look, for example, at the one that you have mentioned, which is the ISU, SIU, SIU, to say to us, in your APP, how are you setting very clear targets for yourself in terms of these partnerships? Because if we get that, we would also, other than being able to monitor you, we would also be able, as have been said by the Honorable Khai before, when the Competition Commission comes to report to us, we can say to them, but what are you doing? This is plan that we have from the BBBE Commission, and challenge them as well. Because what is apparent from the questions that have been raised is that we all value the transformation agenda that you are holding. My final question would just be, Madam, I noticed that two of you, as the woman in this delegation, aptly expressed yourself. And we know that within the economic sphere, there is a skewed distribution of authority and wealth. Women, I think if I have it correctly, help me, Matabula, is it 17% or 23%? It's low. It's below 30%. Now, if we're talking about broad-based, I mean, women is more than 51% of the population. Let me get to my question. My question is, are you also looking as a commission on the distribution of economics, wealth and authority to women as a particular focus of broad-based empowerment? Thank you very much. Let's see, we have 5 minutes. It's not going to be fair to give you 5 minutes to answer to all of them. So it's up to you which ones you take, but I'm sorry, I'm going to limit you to 5 minutes. The others you can give to us in writing.
Chair, I'm going to try and do that as quickly as I can. Chair, just in terms of the fraudulent BBBE certificates, as we've indicated, we're looking into them. As you would have noticed from our report, the other ones, where we pick them up, we instruct them to be withdrawn without an investigation, and they get to be withdrawn. So there are those that we pick up and then we instruct. So the letters that are being issued, we've got over 100 that have already been withdrawn from the market. But in respect of the specific matter that you have raised, there is a complaint. So the 334 complaints in total that you see, they include the complaints that were lodged by Honorable McPherson of the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry. So those are under investigation. So we're not at liberty to discuss them in the public up until we've made findings on them. All right. But we did indicate that we consider that there is merit to investigate based on the certificates themselves. Some of them do present themselves as if they're not reflecting the correct status of BBBE in them. All right. So in terms of the, I think it's Honorable Makwebu, the issues that you've raised are particularly important. And we have indicated the reason why we've got that stakeholder relations and relationship building as a priority. Because we do know that our mandate will not be complete if we do not work hand-in-hand with the NPA as well as the FATS. Because what our legislation unfortunately does is that we can investigate the aspect that relates to BBBE, but when it becomes now a criminal offense, is the FATS as well that must come on board, but as well as the NPA. There are some matters where, even as the commission ourselves, we are able to then get the evidence that will then give the NPA the opportunity to prosecute directly without a further investigation. But there are some matters where we find that the evidence, the hard evidence that is needed for criminal prosecution is not there in our investigation. That's when we then bring in the FATS. So Busi indicated that when we started, the first thing that we did was to engage with those entities to explain our legislation, to explain all of the offences that are there, because that is an activity that we think is very important, so that even when we refer matters, they don't arrive at somebody that does not have an understanding of our legislation. We've had very fruitful discussions with the NPA, but we've battled slightly with the head of the FATF, specifically because there were different people acting at that time. And hence we're saying, at this moment, we think that we're going to be in a position to have at least an arrangement that will help us. Just to give you an example, there's one letter that is referred to FATS on fronting. The first thing that the the person that sending the letter had to understand was what is fronting. So we have to get, you know, to take the officer through the legislation first for them to understand and to say what kind of evidence now that they need to be able to refer this properly. So those relationships, we're enhancing them. We do realize that they are very critical. And as we said, with the NPA, there's already an MOU that was negotiated. We've met with the director, Sean Abrams. We have had that. So the draft is ready, so it's just awaiting our signature. So that will facilitate at least the processes for us. And then in terms of the corruption issue, if you look at our vision and our values, then you'll see on our values, we highlighted the issue of corruption upfront. That is one thing that we realize. Every time a person has got a mandate to investigate somebody, that person is always, there's always a danger or a risk of them being bribed. And through that process, all of our staff members are going through the vetting process within government, and we continue to do that. We also monitor the issue of receiving gifts and so forth. So that is monitored on a daily basis. So even if you receive a bottle of water, when you come back, you must record it, and it must be known. So, but we will not tolerate any form of that corruption. So we disclose, even if we got a call, if Joseph is investigating a matter, he gets a call, he will indicate that I got a call from a person about this matter saying this and this. So everybody must know. So we encourage that as well, just to make sure that we do that. But we do understand that we must have tight systems that will actually put controls for us. In terms of the... Oh, and I think we will consider to do the lifestyle audits. We'll do them. In addition to the normal vetting. In fact, we've always... I remember when the chairperson was still at the National Lotteries Board, I was there as well. And one thing that we insisted on was that we would like to have all members have a lifestyle audit. And it was so difficult to get everyone to agree to a lifestyle audit at the time. But it is important because our lifestyle, we must always be seen to be living within our means as well, because as people that are at that risk, the public must be able to also test us as well. So in terms of just the issue about the Honorable Lund, I think in terms of the issues around the political support, I think for us, what we would like to see for BEE to actually work is for all politicians to also speak in one language around it as an objective. And we understand that there may be different views in terms of where we're going, but when there's a legislation that has been passed by Parliament, it helps when everybody is driving towards that objective, because the Parliament is one. So for us, the inconsistencies in messages sometimes makes it difficult for the people that are supposed to apply it properly and with one goal in mind. But in terms of the non-compliance, I must just mention that we actually have written a letter to this committee to raise the issue of non-compliance, and we've actually asked this committee to try and make sure that for the entities that report to this committee that they actually are called to account, so that they can also give reasons why they are not able to submit. But the right thing that we realized for government, but also for the JSE-listed companies, was that because this was the first year where they were required, this was the first time, so we understood that there would be teething problems. However, with government, the teething problem became even worse, because by the time we were supposed to be having reports from government, there was no report from the government entity at all. So at least for now, we've got about 21. The list was given you, the list of the entities in government that they've reported. For government departments, it's only the trade and industry that has submitted the report. And then the others are SOEs like your DNL and all of those they've submitted. But the rest then, if you don't see an entity on that list of 21, all of them have not reported. So if they fall within this committee, we have already written a letter. I think we wrote the letter already in March. Chair, we've addressed it to yourself. We'll have to check. We've addressed a letter to yourself and also to Honorable John Fass. So for the select committee as well as the portfolio committee relating to trade and industry to deal with that. But for the entities themselves, we've written letters to them, and we've indicated to them that we'll write to their specific portfolio committees in
in Parliament for them to also call them to account on that. So that's the step that we've taken on that one. Chair, my time, my 5 minutes is running away, but I'm trying to check if there, if there's anything that I have not responded to quickly before. Yes. Honorable Matibul, I think we will have an answer for you on that, because in fact, this year, honorable members, the other thing that I must just emphasize, we started operating only in 2016, so we're fairly new institution. But what one thing that we have done is to just make sure that we put our resources, though limited, to areas that are very important. So outreaches for us are, even for this year, on top of the agenda, especially because of the abuse that we've seen around the, especially people in the rural areas that don't know what's happening. I think, Honorable Khai, the retrospective application of the legislation, unfortunately, can't be remedied through a regulation. It is in the Act. So the, when the President proclaimed the amendments, he proclaimed them to come into effect on the 24th of October 2014. So if there's any fighting that took place before that time, even though we find it, we can't do anything about it. The law doesn't allow us to do anything. And the list that we provided of non-investigation, most of the cases that were received in 2016 were cases of fronting where people were made directors and shareholders coming from 2002. That's how old it is, actually. A person has been fronted for 2 decades or a decade, and there's nothing that we can do about it. But we've explained to the person that the law doesn't allow us to do anything about it. So when we are able to negotiate something, a positive outcome, then we try and negotiate that and facilitate something between the parties, but it's not within the law that we are able to do that. And then the last thing around the exclusion of employees, unfortunately, the broad-based nature of BEE was to say, let's not focus on only individuals owning shares. Let's make it broad. Let's make sure that employees in a company also have a stake. I think the role of the commission now will be to assist companies to do proper employee ownership structures, and then so that we can minimize the abuse. But I think to exclude the employees completely would actually do a disservice. We think that we must actually just make sure that it is done properly and monitor it accordingly. And then the last thing that I must then mention before I just give Busi an opportunity, just a few seconds on the outreaches. The issue around office space and all of this, and those are challenges that we've placed there, but I think the department is dealing with that, and we are hopeful that this year at least a proper decision on funding will happen. But the one thing that from everywhere all over the world, the reason why you don't have a regulator taking money from the fines is that it might skew its way of doing its enforcement work. Because then they might actually, it might be a perverse incentive. So all over the world, they try not to make it. So all the money fines must go to the central revenue, but the central revenue must then prioritize the work of that entity and give it sufficient funding. But you can't take money from the fines. Yes. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Matebula, just to summarize, I did mention that we've already, in 2017-18, done 80 outreaches, and part of it was in Limpopo. What we're doing now is that we're partnering with government departments, because what we find people normally doing is that we'll come as commissioners, we don't know the lay of the land, but when you work with a government department in that particular area, they understand which communities and how to reach those communities. And we find that it's actually working out very well for us to work with government departments, especially the economic development departments. But also what we'll be rolling out is a media campaign focusing mostly on community radio stations and print media, but going to local areas, not just doing your normal national newspapers. You want to go to use your community radio stations and your local newspapers. So for this particular year, 18-19, that should be our focus. And what we try and do as well is that we look at the area. So if you're going to Nelspruit, for instance, then Lindu and I will do that area because we speak the language. And if you're going to Limpopo, then we'll have somebody who speaks the language, so that you actually summarize the legislation in the language that people can understand. And unfortunately, currently the budget is really constrained. But what we'd like to do is to take some of these booklets, because what we've done, booklets
to summarize some of the issues, but then we need to now do them in our own languages. So that should be a focus as well going forward. And we hope that that will then assist as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner, you are very fortunate in that you are not a member of parliament. Otherwise, we would have had difficulty doing justice to the answering of the questions, which you did eloquently within that limited time, although you doubled it to 10. Honourable members, I think we join together in expressing our appreciation to the Commission and the team. I wanted to test something with you that the Commissioner has raised. On various occasions during the report, they said, we have the documents. Now, I am looking at Saroj, because Saroj really can be filling your inbox on your emails with all the information that she sends. But as have been said in previous meetings, we welcome it. There's 13 entities in DTI, and we can get information from them. So I'm one of those that would not mind if the BBBE Commission sends documents to Saroj that they consider to be important. The Honourable Matavula, if we look, for example, at one of the staff members appearing on a radio station, and they send that information through to us via Saroj, and Saroj then passes it on to us. He can send you something 9 o'clock at night, but she's not one of those people that would send you messages after 10 or before 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, that creates a panic. So she manages the time responsibly. I wanted to test, members, who else would be willing, prepared to receive such information from the office of the Public Liaison Office of DTI in Parliament. I am one of those who welcome those. Is there anybody else who wants to join in getting that?
Did you get it already?
No, but what I'm asking is you must say you want to get it. We don't want to clog your email box and have you coming to complain that you get these things that you don't want. So you are okay with that? Right? It looks like all of us are okay. All of us are okay. Thank you very much. We would ask you to bear with us. We're not going to be long, so that we can greet you when you go. Honourable members, I have a letter from the Minister, Derek Hanekom, in the Department of Tourism, inviting us to the 5th in Daba. He's particularly inviting us to the ministerial session. Now, this is what Honorable Faber and myself calls the tourism in Daba. But honorable members, I have a problem with this letter, in that this in Daba is happening on the 7th of May. And on the 7th, on that week of the 8th of May, this is on the Sunday. Remember, the thing runs for the whole week, from the 7th to the 11th. Now, it wouldn't make sense to just go for the ministerial session, which is 2 hours and dinner, on the 7th. What Honorable Faber and myself did before, it will stay for the whole week. But that week, we're having our oversight in Limpopo, and we decided on our oversight before we received this. So I'm requesting your buy into a communication to the minister where we apologize and indicate that we are doing our oversight for that week. Can we proceed in that way on this invitation? Because inviting all members of the committee. Honorable Mahwebo.
I think that's proper, Chairperson. I have no objection that you write back and excuse us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Then we've dealt with that. Honorable Faber.
Chairperson, my question is, can we not just go for the 7th and then go on oversight as from there?
It wouldn't make sense. You've been there on the 7th. you've seen what happens. The minister sits there, there's a panel, you can watch it on television. I'm looking at the costs, and I'm saying that it's not worth the cost.
Okay, so
we agree on that. Our secretary will communicate that to the minister's office. Just the last item on the agenda, honourable members, is the penultimate item. The minutes of our meeting that was held on the 28th of March was circulated to us last week already, if I have it correct. It was a briefing by Durko. There was the members present, the proceedings. Kupeka has done a lot in terms of capturing the background and the committee comments and deliberations. I've looked at all of it, and we have item 5, where we've adopted the second term program. I'm coming back to that now. And then just item 6, the conversation we had on the study tour in Norway. Can I get a proposal for the acceptance of that minute, please? Honorable Khai, Honorable Mahuevo, thank you very much. Just the last item then. We are not going to meet at this select committee before our joint oversight to Limpopo. Now, our researchers and content advisors are working on that. We will promise to timeously share with you further details related thereto. The event is planned for the 8th to the 11th of May. You know, we were not there last week. We are here in a cramped program for this week, but we will try and get that finalized so that we can communicate it with you sometime next week. Are we okay with that, honorable members? Are there any questions you have on that matter? I don't want to deny you the right to speak on this important matter. Orwahan, you're itching.
No, not on this one.
Because I'm closing now.
No, can you give me that opportunity, that an announcement for my committee?
Sure.
For the members, the same members, that tomorrow we're having a meeting, a select committee on economic and business development. The venue will be outside the parliament, one of the hotels. The committee secretary is busy with that. But again, on Friday, we are having a meeting with the committee on Friday. We're meeting with the Department of Energy. The minister has confirmed he will be also be part of the meeting. Just making that announcement. Thank you very much.
I thought you were going to ask us who's available on Friday. Honourable members, thank you very much for your participation. We are adjourned.